You ready?
Vancouver's favorite way to wake up.
I love their personalities. Just what I like. I think it's super funny. Love it.
I'm just going to have to undo my pants. We're getting
started. And those will all address Uranus.
One of the most popular morning radio teams in the business.
And Drew.
Nat Hunter and Drew Savage.
You can get arrested for driving nude.
Can you really?
Yes, of course you can.
Oh, note to self.
Hello, Cher Shandling.
Nat and Drew.
Optimus Prime with Nat and Drew.
Producer James Cameron.
Hey, Nat. Hey, Drew. How you doing?
I'm Sam Smith.
You're listening to Nat and Drew.
Good morning, Vancouver. I'm Carly Rae Jepsen, and you're listening to The Nat and Drew Show.
Here's Nat and Drew.
Erin learned something through, not from her dating life, but her TV dating life.
That's right.
In terms of what people consider to be a great spot to go for a first date.
That's right. I live vicariously through Kai and Olivia on Love Island. Okay, so I know all about dating because I watch Love Island. I admit it, and I'm not even going to call it a guilty pleasure because I feel no guilt. I love that show.
So you've transitioned over the last couple of years from The Bachelor to Love Island, and you're watching all the different Love Island shows from around the world.
Oh, you better believe it. Australia, England, America. But it was so funny because they were having a conversation, some of the boys, while they were working out in the gym, about first dates at the gym. And for some reason, that just made me really think, like, is that just like, is that something that's new? Are people actually doing a first date at the gym? And how horrible I thought that was. And then one of the guys was like, he got the ick, which is a big expression on Love Island, because this girl was running on the treadmill and he didn't like the way she ran. And I was like, what the? I mean, who would go to the gym on a first date and then run in front of the person? Anyway, it just blew my mind, but apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, there would be a subset of people that for sure, gym culture people, like the gym is their thing. CrossFit people, I think. Because guess what? They're really fit. And they want to show off their bodies.
Those people are not concerned about running in front of others.
Yeah.
If you're a contestant on Love Island, you probably don't have to worry about running in front of others.
Well, maybe she was super gorgeous and super fit, but just wasn't coordinated.
Yeah, flat footed.
Maybe she just had funny running legs.
Yeah.
But honestly, like
a strange gait.
That's what I mean.
Okay,
but
fair.
If someone was like, "Let's go to the gym as a first date," I'd be like, "Can I just sit and watch?" Because like I might be into that, depending on what they look like.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to do anything.
And if you're not into them, you might be into watching other people.
Yeah, right? Like, it might be something worth seeing.
Yeah, but who is the creepy watcher? Who's the guy in the full suit?
With the rack of ribs?
That's just sitting there watching.
I know a creepy watcher in this room.
Well, it's not creepy.
Who's a creepy watcher? Drew's a creepy watcher?
He has said just a few things.
What?
I don't want to. Creepy's a bit harsh.
Creepy's a bit harsh. What I've said as somebody who goes to a gym, I think I'm the only one out of the four of us who has a current gym membership.
Yes,
right?
You are.
I have one I'm not paying for. I mean, I'm paying for, but I'm not going.
Fair enough. I'm the only one who's attending a gym right now on a regular basis. And I've absolutely noticed people at the gym who appear to be together and working. Now, are they there on their first date? Like, I don't know, because I'm not tracking the number of times that I've seen them.
Really?
But if you are, like, further to what you were saying, Nat, about the subset of people, if this is your thing, if you love going to the gym, if you love being physically active, if you're in great shape, I can see that being a place where, you know,
sure,
you're feeling good about yourself and each other.
And I would also guess that you're not doing your hardest workout ever. Like, you're not you're in great shape and you can do more, but this is not necessarily the workout where you're going to be all out and you're going to be exhausted at the end. You're going to be doing exercises that I'm going to bend down and lift some weights.
And then I'm going to snap.
And that sort of stuff. Like, that's where I could see, you're not going to be so red-faced and hair plastered to your face because you've just exhausted yourself.
Can you imagine, though? I mean, that is the last place I would want to
go. So worst place for you would be at the gym.
Yes. I could not. Nothing about that made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. We actually posted on our Facebook and Instagram pages that we were going to talk about worst places to have a first date. If you think you've got one that's other than the gym, you can call us at 604-280-1035 or text at 103535. But literally 100% of the people who have participated in the conversation so far on social say no, absolutely, gym is the worst place. With one person, I should say 100%, but there is one exception. One person did say church, would be
would be
worse than going for the gym.
It'd be a bit weird.
Like, you're not talking.
That's it.
Like, you're not talking to each other. You're there to listen to somebody else talk.
It'll also feel like you're not really on a date. You're being recruited.
Yeah.
You're like, well, we're not getting to know each other, and I don't even know if we have the same belief system. What am I doing? Why am I putting money in this plate?
604-280-1035, or you can text anytime at 103535. What is the absolute worst place to go for a first date?
Somebody sent us a message here from 604, said the worst first date they ever had was hot yoga.
Oh.
So red and sweaty and nauseous. That's from Karen in Queensboro. Like, like hot yoga is not even a fourth, fifth, or sixth date for me.
I don't care how bendy you are.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
Yeah. Somebody here, you didn't leave your name, but said that you've had a couple of really bad first dates, but one of them was your own fault. You picked Wreck Beach, and at the time you had no idea it was a nude beach. So that would just be some place to go.
What a place to find out.
Wow.
You must have been new to the area.
604-280-1035 is our number. Susie, for you, worst place to go on a first date. Where did you go?
We did the grouse grind.
Oh.
It was terrible.
Your idea or theirs?
Their idea, 100%.
And why? Did you just feel like you couldn't really say no?
Yes, I really wanted to go on the date. And I had just finished, I think I just finished doing a half marathon and thought that I was really fit.
Got it, okay.
So I thought I could probably do the gross grind. Everybody does it, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't necessarily the case.
So what happened?
Well, I got ready for the date, and I was in this, like, cute outfit, nice tank top. I did my hair, and then we started off, and I, like, the first quarter of the gross grind is, like, the worst possible part of the whole thing.
Yes.
There were people, like, who were way older than me, kept passing me, and I got so hot. My bangs, my hair went curly. My mustache was sweating. I got, like, all this dust kept sticking to my mustache. And then the guy was like, I'm trying to make it under an hour, so I'm just going to go ahead. I was like, I don't think I'm going to see you ever.
So no second date then with the grouse grinder.
You know what? I don't even want to admit it, but there was.
You tried one more time. Was there a third date?
No, there was not.
All right.
You're waking up with the Nat and Drew Show.
Okay, here we go.
Now, here's the scoop.
Gwyneth Paltrow was being sued for $300,000 by a retired optometrist, Terry Sanderson, for crashing into him on a ski run in Utah. And the verdict is in from the jury.
Was Gwyneth Paltrow at fault? No. Was Terry Sanderson at fault? Yes. Did Terry Sanderson's fault cause Gwyneth Paltrow's harm? Yes. What percent of the fault do you assign to Terry Sanderson? 100%.
So that didn't go well Mr. Sanderson. Gwyneth was only countersuing for $1 plus legal fees, which she was awarded. So the jury believed her argument that this was a guy who exaggerated his injuries and was obsessed with trying to flip it into a big payday.
Yeah.
Like the original amount that he was suing for was $3
million. Right.
And then, you know, that came down eventually with the lawsuit that proceeded for $300,000. And they painted this case of a guy who just wanted to turn this incident on a ski hill into a giant payday, and it didn't work out.
There was a lot of people that were talking about that, you know, there was a good chance that this guy was thinking that, hey, like, somebody like Gwyneth Paltrow is not going to want to go through the rigmarole of, you know, going to court or whatever, and then would just pay out maybe $300,000. And she's like, you know what? No.
I got time.
Yeah, I'm running goop, but you know what? I'm going to defend myself and defend my name, and just on the principle of it, the idea of just, like, I'm not going to just pay you when I did nothing wrong.
And it's funny because I actually will confess that I thought it was the exact opposite. I thought she had smashed into him, and because she was a celebrity, thought, you know what? I can, like, whatever. And he was the one that actually hit her.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people did, you know, like, kind of think that that was what was going on. But as things played out,
yes,
it certainly became clear that, no, that's not what happened.
Exactly. It was fascinating. And it was just fun. I loved all the memes of her with her crazy glasses and all her clothes.
I did like her clothes. Yeah, I was into it. There's a pair of boots that she was wearing.
Yes.
That was the thing that I found the most interesting. I'm like, where'd she get those boots?
Celebrity Court TV could absolutely be a channel.
Oh, yeah.
Even play old cases if there's nothing new happening.
So AI is everywhere, and it is scary and fascinating, and it is going to change a whole bunch of things. Probably it's also going to change music and what you're actually hearing and who creates it. This has gone viral. So it's an AI-generated verse in the style of Kanye West. It was posted online a few days ago. It is everywhere. So it's this guy who's very, like, he knows AI and he knows music. And he was just sort of demonstrating how AI can be used to create a song in the style of anyone when you don't have that person in the studio. So his name is Roberto Nixon, and he used his computer program, and he dropped down like 8 bars of a rap verse using music that he found on YouTube and using his own voice, and then changed it to Kanye's voice. So this is Roberto.
I got a fantasy that's beautiful, that's dark and twisted, but I attacked the whole religion all because of my ignorance.
Then using AI, he changed it to sound like Kanye.
I got a fantasy that's beautiful, that's dark and twisted, but I attacked the whole religion all because of my ignorance.
So he's saying, and others are agreeing with him, that at some point down the road, we could be listening to songs that we think, hey, this is our, like, hey, that's a Beyonce song, that's a Miley Cyrus song or whatever, and it's not because of AI.
The artist would have to sign off on the likeness of their voice, would they not? Like, if you're literally trying to recreate the sound of somebody else.
So it's interesting, and this is where they're trying to figure all of that out, because if it's in the style of, and if you have a disclaimer, I'm not sure. Like a likeness, they're also saying that for like acting down the road, that you could have, if, you know, if Meryl Streep wanted to, if somebody wanted to use Meryl Streep in perpetuity and it wanted a different age of Meryl Streep, Meryl Streep would have to sign off.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was so close and looked almost like 99% like Meryl Streep, but not 100%, I don't know. What's real?
Yeah. I mean, these are the questions of our time. Yeah. Right? They literally are. Mm-hmm. Right? How's this all going to work? Because it's cool. Like, there's an absolutely, to me, there's an aspect of like, wow, that is so cool.
But it's also very Matrixy.
It is a little bit Matrixy.
And I don't know whether I want the red pill or the blue pill.
But you're interested in taking one.
I feel at some point I'm going to be forced to pick red pill or blue pill.
The Scoop. Weekdays at 720, 820, and 920.
Move 1035.
If you'd like to celebrate your Friday by getting a free coffee or maybe a bigger prize, University of Waterloo professor says he has figured out how to win with the Roll Up the Rim to Win app on Tim Hortons 80% of the time he plays. And there was a whole bunch of stats and math that went into this because he is like a statistician. But basically, the simplest way to explain it is your easiest and your best chance to win is between 3 and 4 in the morning.
Ooh. Really? Okay, so the way the Roll Up the Rim contest works now, there's no actual rims on the cups anymore. It's all like, I did it for the first time a few weeks ago. You just open the app, and I can't even remember if you push something.
There's no virtual roll up the rim? There's no rim to virtually roll up?
No, like, I think you just...
Push a button? I haven't done it, so I have no idea how... Because I used to do it the old school way with the, you know, but I don't have the app, so I don't know. But obviously, you can't just keep pushing and, like, you know, like, you can just keep pushing.
No, it rolls buttons once, but it's almost like a slot machine kind of thing. As I recall it, like, you may touch an icon or something like that on the screen, and then it just reveals whether or not you've won anything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a time of day factors in.
So this professor, he says that basically he looked through like all the numbers because Tim Hortons will publish the prizes and, you know, the people that have won and whatever. And when he went through all of that, he just found that between 3 and 4 in the morning was most likely your best chance to win. He wins 80% of the time, though he said he's never won a big prize. He hasn't won a big prize yet. It's just mostly coffees. And he said he's winning more coffees than donuts, so he's a little upset. But 80% of the time is great odds. And Tim Hortons actually has responded because you're like, oh, you know, would they want this to be out there? And their response is like, hey, we love super fans like Professor Wallace, who enjoys strategizing on how to best play, and we appreciate their passion for playing. And we appreciate their passion for Tim Hortons. And so that's if you're into Tim Hortons and you play Roll Up the Rim to Win between 3 and 4 in the morning.
So this guy's getting up between 3 and 4 in the morning just to open up the app and roll. I mean, we're pretty much up at that time. I'm going to start doing it.
No kidding.
Yeah. Just to see.
Well, yeah. You've got until Sunday because it ends on Sunday.
Oh. Well, thank you for letting us know.
So you got to, yeah.
We'll be busy for the next couple of days.
I'm less interested in waking up between 3 and 4 a.m. on the weekends. When I'm up between 3 and 4 during the week,
yeah,
that's timely. I wish this guy had shared this information a little sooner.
Yeah, it seems a little suspicious that at the end of this whole thing, Tim Horton maybe was holding back.
Fair enough.
Well, I think, too, it might be funny that, you know, because Drew is, like, very much a diehard non-coffee drinker, that if you did get up at 3 or 3:30 on a Saturday morning, and that was what you won.
That's why I'm saying I'm less interested in getting up on the weekends.
So barbecue or nothing.
Nat and Drew's Beat the Bank is powered by the King of Floors. Here we are on a Friday morning. Got the Friday vibes going, and hopefully those Friday vibes lead to big money for Nancy in Delta. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good. How are you, Nancy?
I'm fantastic on this Friday.
Yes. You have good energy. I feel like the good energy might help you here.
I hope so.
Now, are you a gambler at heart?
No, I'm really not.
Okay. Come on, Nancy. You seem to like to flirt with danger here and there, don't you?
Sometimes.
Okay. Well, we know for sure that the alarm won't go in the first vault. So you're going to win something.
Yes.
You're going to win something. Open up as many alarms as you want. Stay away from the alarm. If it goes off, we can't give you the money. We will give you a $100 gift card to spend at Kobe Japanese Steak and Seafood House.
All right. Let's find out how much money is there for Nancy this morning, starting with Vault 1.
$125.
Not a lot there.
Nope,
but we're going to go again.
All right.
$350.
Okay. Let's go again.
Decent jump, and Nancy wants more.
$650, Nancy. Now, there have been some... $650 is a good amount of money, first.
It is. You know? It is. It'll pay for a kennel.
For a kennel?
Yes. Well, I'm planning to go away, so this will be good for my dog to go in a kennel.
Oh, for boarding.
Okay, it's a resort, actually.
A lot of them are now. Like, if you get... Yeah. The activities some of them offer, it's pretty sweet. Okay. So, okay. $650 for your dog to go on vacation, or are you going to pass that up so you get more?
I'll do one more.
$700.
Good for an extra $50. Yeah.
You know what? I'm not greedy. I think I'm going to... Okay, wait. Let's go one more. So you know what? Let's just do one more, and then I'm stopping. And if I go to Colby's, I go to Colby's.
Okay, all right.
Okay, it's a Who Cares Friday. Let's go with it. Passing up $700 in Vault 4. What is there more? Is there more in Vault 5? Please!
All right, okay. So we got
one. I'll take it.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm totally sure.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Nice.
$850 for Nancy. Most of it going towards her dog. What's your dog's name?
Aurora.
Aurora. Aww. Most of it for Aurora and a little bit left over for Nancy.
Just a little bit. Glad you squeezed just a little more money out of that gameplay.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Let's see what would have happened in Vault 6. Was there more? Little, okay. Now Vault 7.
$1,100.
Still growing.
There we go. Okay, that's good. Yes.
I wouldn't have had the guts. Yeah. So that's perfect.
And it wasn't that much more, so that's good.
Yeah. You did great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yay. Congrats. Thank you so much, guys.
Well, today's leading edge invention is tomorrow's collectible antique. that is repeating itself again at an auction that just went live in Chicago yesterday. Have you heard this? An original iPhone from 2007, the iPhone 1, that's still unwrapped and in its original packaging, is up for auction. And the opening bid, $32,000.
Ooh.
And it's expected by the time the auction is done, it's being done online, it's over a few days, it could fetch as high as $60,000 US for an iPhone 1 in its original packaging.
Okay. Still. So NIB, new in box.
New in box, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Because I've got old ones. You guys know that. Like, I literally just updated, literally.
Yeah, they're not worth squat.
Okay.
If it's in the box and it's unwrapped.
Yeah, darn it.
The person who buys this is not going to unwrap it.
No.
It's going to remain in its box.
And also, you didn't have an iPhone 1.
I think it was a two, Nat.
No, I don't think the two still
come
works.
Come on. It works.
It is funny, though. As futuristic as the iPhone seemed when they were first launched in 2007, there are several features that we take for granted now with our smartphone that the iPhone was not capable of doing, like in its original incarnation, the biggest of which... You couldn't take a selfie.
Yeah, no front camera.
There was no front camera on an iPhone until the iPhone 4 came out in 2010. You couldn't take selfies with iPhones in 2007.
So Apple's responsible for selfies.
I don't think so. I think that that was a feature introduced by other... Because I used to have a flip phone that had a little screen on the front. And when you closed it, if you had the camera app open and you closed it, then the back-facing camera now faces you. And you could take a selfie with using the little screen on the... back of the, which now is the front of the flip phone.
Yeah.
Apple, like all great companies, take smaller companies' ideas and make them their own.
Yeah, fair enough.
And then make $1 billion. You also couldn't take videos, only photos with the iPhone 1. Video wasn't a feature for the first two generations of iPhones. You couldn't copy and paste files or text or anything from one page to another. You couldn't do something as simple as copy and paste. There was no app store. You could only run Apple software, so there was no app for Gmail or Amazon or even banking.
And getting anything on the phone, you had to do it through iTunes. You had to plug it into your computer, then go through iTunes to get anything onto the phone. Like, even if, like software or whatever from Apple, you had to get it through your computer.
I have no memories of, like, I know my first iPhone was the 3. And I have no memories of doing any of this stuff. I might have literally just used my iPhone as a phone.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah, thinking it was so cool.
Yeah,
like, you
exactly.
couldn't even change the wallpaper on it.
Right.
It was stationary. It was just a blue globe in the background. You couldn't change that.
I think I must have just really loved texting on it. Maybe that's what I did. You know what I mean?
Like possibly the access to music on your phone as well. That was certainly a game changer, you know, with all your iTunes purchases and stuff like that. But it does, when you review all of the things that the iPhone couldn't do, you almost want to step into a time machine and go back to your 2007 self and say, don't get this. This is trash.
Yeah, just you just wait.
Like, you think this is the gateway to the future now. You haven't seen anything yet.
Time to go back.
In time.
It's Nat and Drew's Retro News.
Take a look at pop culture history for this day, March 31st, the year 1995, and this movie opened in theaters.
Fat guy in a little coat. Fat guy in a little coat.
Don't.
Fat guy in a little coat. Fat guy in a little coat.
Tommy Boy with Chris Farley and David Spade. I'm honestly not sure what was being said there. Was it fat guy in a little car?
Fat guy in a little coat.
In a little coat.
Yeah.
Even worse.
Yeah. So
it was a little car.
Yeah. In the movie, Chris Farley puts on David Spade's coat and he's like, it's so small on him. He's like, look, fat guy in a little coat. And then he rips his coat.
So the premise of this movie is that Chris Farley's character's dad is like a tycoon, business tycoon, and he dies, and the family business is in shambles, and he's got this bumbling son who's a moron, who's got to try and save it, and David Spade plays a snide accountant that is helping him. But interesting fact, Rob Lowe actually plays Chris Farley's brother in the movie.
Stepbrother.
Yeah. There was supposed to be a more of a relationship between the two of them, and then the script sort of changed, but Rob Lowe is actually uncredited for Tommy Boy because he wanted his appearance to be a surprise.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Because he appears later in the movie, and then it's all like he's like the antagonist. He's the one that's trying to take the company down, and it's some good fun.
Tonight, all three of you are going to see David Spade. He's been in town two shows. I think he performed last night and then again tonight. What's the venue he's at again tonight?
I think it's the Queenie or is it the Vogue?
I have no idea. I literally am the tag along.
Yeah. I bought the tickets. I don't know. But the thing is, I came to David Spade later. So as much as I like Fat Boy and a Little Coat, I think like he's done so many funny movies and he's so incredible on social media. He does a little talk show and I think he's really, really funny. And so I'm really excited.
So it's David Spade night in Vancouver for you three.
Yeah.
At the Vogue. At the Folk. Yeah, can confirm.
Okay, thank you.
I'm glad one of the three of you know where you're going.
Well, we better, because I'm planning to get there early so we can try and meet him.
No, I thought we were going drinking. That's kind of why I'm there.
We're not going to stand in the alley behind the Vogue and wait.
No, I thought we were going for... You said you want to go for drinks, and I'm like, yes. And then you're like, oh, and we're going to see David Spade. I'm like, fine, but we're going for drinks.
Also on this day in 1985...
WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan, Mr. T's, we reign supreme. Can you dig that?
Oh! What is happening?
I'll tell you what's happening. The first ever WrestleMania took place on this day in Madison Square Garden, 1985. Your main event was Hulk Hogan tagging up with Mr. T to face Rowdy Roddy Rat Piper and Paul, Mr. Wonderful Orndorff.
Fun.
Liberace was the guest timekeeper, and Muhammad Ali was the guest referee.
Oh, cool. That's neat. Yeah.
I would have loved it if Liberace was the guest wrestler.
Exactly. Just sparkles everywhere.
He had the robes. He had the robes to be a wrestler. Yeah. There's no question about that. WrestleMania 39 is this weekend, two nights at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. They're expecting 65,000 people each night for WrestleMania. It's grown into a bit of a thing.
Have you ever been to a big one like that?
I've been to two.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh. So it's appealing for you for live
Yeah.
It sounds fun. Now, it's no David Spade.
Will he be wearing glittery, sparkly robes? I think not.
What are the biggest tourist traps in the world? According to a company called Casago, which is a vacation rental company, they scoured the internet looking for attractions and how many times the phrase tourist trap was used. So I have the number one in Canada, and then I have the top three in the world. The biggest tourist trap in Canada is...
Got to be Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls says Drew. Anything different, Aaron? Niagara Falls?
I don't think of it as a tourist trap, though, is it? It must be.
Niagara Falls, that would be my guess, too. Yeah,
it's Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
It's if you haven't been yet, you're going this summer, right?
Yes.
Be prepared.
Okay.
For all the tacky souvenir shops
It is, like, the falls are obviously this natural wonder.
Yes. Amazing.
It's everything around the falls
terrible.
That makes it a tourist trap.
Exit through the gift shop.
Ripley's, believe it or not, might be the lowest key of all of the things around it.
Wow.
The falls are beautiful, and I think everybody should see them. It's incredible. Yes. It's just avert your eyes from the other side of the street where it's just lined with tacky gift shops, and it's true. Ripley's, believe it or not, is that the wax museum?
I think there's a wax museum.
Okay. Budget wax museum.
I love all of that.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Yes. Yeah, be prepared to pay $40 for a piece of fudge.
The wax figures have started to melt. I think they've been there so long. Pierre Elliott Trudeau's face is starting to droop.
Yeah. Unrecognizable.
All right, biggest tourist traps in the world. The number one destination was actually a destination in the U.S., and I was actually surprised by this. Biggest tourist trap in the world and the U.S.
Would it not be Disney? Is Disney considered a tourist trap?
It should be. It's probably somewhere on the list, but definitely not in at number one, two, or three.
Wow, okay. That surprises me.
Mount Rushmore?
No, not one, two, or three.
Good guess.
Okay.
Vegas?
Not one, two, or three. Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco.
Got it.
As the number one tourist trap in the world. I've been there. It was a few years ago. I didn't really find it. It was definitely not as tacky as Niagara Falls.
Not even close.
I loved it. I'm like, it feels just nice.
Yeah, but those pretzels, I mean, they're overpriced.
$40 for a pretzel.
Bubba Gump's shrimp.
Fisherman's Bubba Gump's. That's a tourist thing for sure.
Wow,
In at number two, Las Rambla in Barcelona, which is a tree-lined street, which is full of like tapas bars and street performers and music, and I thought it was fun, but it's very touristy and overpriced because you go like two streets over and again it's much cheaper. And the third was the Dole Plantation in Hawaii.
Okay.
Like bananas?
Pineapples.
But the thing is, and you know this, Drew, right? They don't grow pineapples there anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you go and you get an ice cream.
Well, the Dole Whip is the thing that people go
is the
Dole Whip, the pineapple flavored whip.
Yeah.
So it's like an abandoned pineapple.
Yeah.
I didn't know they didn't grow pineapples there anymore.
No, they don't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have a building. I mean, I saw a picture of it. It looks nice. Yeah. It's not abandoned. It's not like abandoned. Like,
but,
yeah, abandoned.
But they talk about the production and the history. Yeah. But it's all, I think, yeah, it's someplace else now where they actually grow them.
Well,
yeah.
I know you get the whip still there.
That's
because
it.
That's the big draw is the Dole
whip.
And
it's expensive. It's $40.
Yeah. $40, yeah. Okay, so is there a tourist trap that you guys like?
Well, it's funny as you're going over the list of things. I like them all. I think that's what qualifies them as being, it's funny, the one that I'm most down on is Niagara Falls.
Yes.
So I feel like when you're from an area, you can identify or see kind of the other side of the tourist traps a little more easily.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've been to Las Ramblas in Barcelona. I thought it was lovely.
Yeah, you're on the street. You're like, I'm having tapas and things.
I love Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah.
You know, I love all of these things. Yeah. So, I like most of them. It's not just Niagara Falls that I like to make fun of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's something in that, like, is it a trap or is it an attraction, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in the Okanagan and Kelowna, and there was, you know, Flintstones, Bedrock City.
Right, yeah.
And it was my favorite place to go. So I think that's kind of why I was kind of born to love these things, too. Like Castle Fun Park in Abbotsford.
Yeah.
I love it.
Really?
I love it.
You're not alone. Lots of people do.
Oh, my gosh.
I make Steve stop every time.
I'm not even sure that's considered a tourist trap because, like, everybody who lives here loves that so much.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you're heading out or heading back.
Fair enough. It's a stop that you make.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's probably overpriced a little bit because you've the captive audience thing, right?
Of course.
Is always for, like highways, like attractions.
But I love it. If it's got mini golf, I'm in.
Okay.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Joey, anything for you?
Orlando, Universal. I love it. And on top of that, I love City Walk, which is like more the tourist trap than the actual attraction.
Is that attached to Universal?
Yeah, it is. So it's just basically like a lot. It's just like shops, and it's got Forrest Gump. It's got Bubba Gump Shrimp.
Bubba Gump.
It's got the Hard Rock Cafe. It's got all of it. And it connects the two parks, Islands of Adventure and the Universal Park. Love it.
I think we're learning that if there's a Bubba Gump Shrimp, it's a tourist trap.
Is there a Bubba Gump Shrimp at Castle Farm? Fun Park?
There better be.
Not yet.
Alicia is stepping up on a Friday. Don't cash in on the $1,000 minute. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
Great.
All right, Alicia, if you win $1,000, what are you going to do with it?
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, all right. Let's have some fun.
Yeah.
Do some online shopping, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe some in-person shopping? Maybe some indulging, some paying of bills. Well, we hope it goes your way here. We're rooting for a big $1,000 win on a Friday morning.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. 1 minute on the clock. We'll ask you 10 questions. You get all 10 right. The $1,000 is yours. If not, it is $10 for each correct answer you give us. If you don't know the answer to something, say pass. And if we have time, we'll come back to it the moment you give us an answer. It counts. You can't take it back.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Alicia. Here we go. $1,000 minute starts now. Mars or Venus? Which planet has no moons?
Mars.
A Padawan is someone in Star Wars who's training to be what?
A Jedi.
What will you typically find at the dull end of a pencil?
Pass.
Did the Seattle Mariners win or lose their season opening baseball game yesterday?
Lost.
Who is replacing Ryan Seacrest on Live with Kelly and Ryan?
Pass.
What type of surgeon specializes in issues involving bones, joints, and muscles?
Pass.
What's the name of Celine Dion's biggest hit?
Pass.
What's it called when you open a bottle of champagne with a sword?
Pass.
Name two ingredients you'd use to make pancakes from scratch.
Water and flour.
Murder Mystery 2 hits Netflix today. Name one of the stars.
Oh, Adam Sandler or Jennifer Aniston.
Okay,
so it was rough. Mars or Venus, which has no moons? Venus has no moons.
Okay.
We gave that answer at the top of the hour. We always give you the answer to question one, so just keep that in mind for next time. You do know your Star Wars,
yes,
though. A Padawan is training to be a Jedi. I think you just didn't quite understand the question, because what do you find? So the one end of the pencil is a tip, and at the other end of the pencil is a...
Eraser.
There you go. So the Seattle Mariners, you took a guess, but they won yesterday 3-0 over Cleveland. Mark Consuelos, who is Kelly Ripa's husband, is replacing Ryan Seacrest.
Okay.
The type of surgeon that specializes in bones, etc., is an orthopedic surgeon. Celine Dion's biggest hit, My Heart Will Go On. And sabering is what you do when you open a bottle of champagne with a sword.
Okay.
So two correct answers and $20 as you head into the
weekend. Thank you.
If you are Canadian, born and bred, is there a word that you say that makes it easy for others to tell that you are Canadian? Because there is a popular TikToker, he has the account English with Ty, that says it is very easy, and it is one word that Canadians say differently than Americans and people in the UK. It is this word.
In British English and American English, it's simply out. In Canadian English, it's more like oat.
It's not English with Ty. It's not oat. Oat. Who says it that way? Oat. No, it's not. I don't know why they think that about us.
I don't know whether we're the best judges of what we sound like when we say we're. I wonder sometimes, because I heard, and I guess the sound is the same, but you know, they all you say Canadians say a boot.
Yes.
No,
a
we boot, don't. And it's like I never hear that. That's not what I hear in my head. But maybe with our accents to people who speak differently, that's what it sounds like. Maybe to their ears, that's what it sounds like. But I don't hear it.
I don't know.
So I don't know. Much like how, you know, like somebody who lives in the southern U.S. probably doesn't hear their accents the same way we hear them.
Yeah.
And various other accents from around the world.
I understand that. And I understand that there, you know, there are the accents, regional accents within Canada. It's interesting, though, not as much as there are regional accents within the U.S. It's very different. You know, you can tell that there's like the Maritime accent. And then obviously if you're French first, there's an accent there when you're speaking English. There's not as much when it comes to sort of the middle of the country. Like, I don't notice a lot of difference between, say, Ontario and here in BC. I've lived in both. I'm from Ontario. I live in BC. I notice the way we say things are different in BC. Like, we use the word right a lot at the end of a sentence. I know, right? That's a very BC thing. It's not a very Ontario thing. But I don't notice, like, the accent thing differently.
And what happened to A? Remember that expression?
Well, because in BC, it's hey.
It's hey.
Right.
Yeah. But back home in New Brunswick, it's still A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I am immigrated to Canada from the U.S. as a child, and I remember hearing a difference. I really do. I remember, you know, the American accent, I think, is rounder. And it doesn't matter if it's Washington State, California, or the South. Like, there's a rounder, like, house. Like, there's just a rounder thing. And it's a little bit more pinched for Canadians, I think. And then I think, as you said, there are many, like, little, you know, obviously differentiations. Like, I remember I started picking up A when I was a kid. And my dad, who still lived in America, was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, he couldn't believe it.
Sure.
Because it's, huh. In the States.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Right? You
see,
did, huh?
Yeah. See, I find the American accent very drawn out. I have, like, family that lives in Michigan. I know, weird. And which I never really realized how weird Michigan actually was until, like, many years later on. But there, everything was, like, soda, pop. Like, and it's because it sounded weird because I'm like, you're Michigan. Parts of Michigan are further north, actually, than parts of Ontario. But they had this drawl, like, that is.
But again, I wonder if we are the best to assess our own, because you've spent all of your life in either BC or Ontario, Nat. I wonder if you just don't notice some of the subtleties, whereas we do notice the subtle difference between a Michigan accent or a Boston accent.
Yes.
Or a New York accent.
Yes.
We would notice that. Maybe somebody who doesn't or has never lived in either BC or Ontario would notice some subtle differences there.
So how do you say out?
I think I say out.
Out, out. How do you say out?
Out. Out. But I remember one time when I was down, I was on a call with people from the States, and I said house, and then they were like, oh, we didn't hear your accent at all until you said house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're like, house. And I'm like, yeah. House?
But see,
house.
No, you didn't say house. You said house.
But see, but they hear it completely differently.
They hear it differently.
So yeah. It's their problem.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to think. Yeah.
You're waking up with the Nat and Drew Show.
Okay, here we go.
Here's the scoop.
Elon Musk is now the most followed person on Twitter with 133.088 million followers. He does own the platform, so there is that. So I'm not sure how many are Elon bots. Yeah. The top spot was previously held by Barack Obama. He has just under 133.042 million followers. But in related news, and the thing that I found the most interesting about this story is that Elon's number one fan has turned on him and is no longer a part of that massive following. It's a guy by the name of Cat Turd. He's a huge Elon Musk fan. Number one fan, apparently. He has left. He's an anonymous Florida man whose account is a photo of a cat wearing glasses. His handle is Cat Turd. He has 1.6 million followers, and he's known for posting a lot of MAGA stuff. Cat Turd is pretty upset with the changes to Twitter, like too many ads, paying for his verified account status, and getting temporarily banned. So now he's like, that's it, Elon Musk. I'm no longer following you. Mm. Cat Turd out.
Love that.
Yeah. Make Twitter great again.
Yeah.
Meta.
Yeah.
Not Meta.
Yeah.
Meta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Or Meta, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Whatever.
Joke landed. So. That's what matters.
I guess that's the good news. Well, I look forward to hearing what's next for Cat Turd.
I know. Maybe big things.
Will his fandom shift to somebody else now?
Yeah.
If he's no longer the number one fan of Elon Musk.
How does Cat Turd not have his own like right wing talk show on like that? Like not Fox, like the ones that are worse than Fox. What are those ones?
The internet?
No. The
cable, like the Newsmax.
Newsmax or whatever. Mm. Wherever Steve Bannon is.
This is why I'm not good at social media, is that you can have your name. My name on Twitter is just @DrewSavage.
Boring.
Boring. You got to be called Cat Turd. Well, that'll get you a million followers. A sequel to one of the most popular Netflix movies ever made drops today.
Do you remember what happened last time we were on a getaway?
Yeah, some people died.
A lot of people.
You think five people dying is a lot?
Okay.
Murder Mystery 2 with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. The first movie, in case you forgot, it actually won the People's Choice Award for Favorite Movie Comedy of 2019.
Wow. It was cute.
Yeah, people seemed to like it. At one point, it literally was like one of the top five or six most viewed Netflix movies ever. Critics don't love this one, not really a surprise, but the audience score for Murder Mystery 2 actually higher than the audience score for the first Murder Mystery movie.
Wow.
76% of those who got up at 2 in the morning to watch it today said it was fantastic and absolutely worth their time.
So, Aaron, what did you think of it then? You do seem sleepy this morning.
The Scoop. Weekdays at 7:20, 8:20, and 9:20.
Move 103.5.
Let's get Cindy some money with Nat and Drew's Beat the Bank, powered by the King of Floors. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
Morning. Any big plans for the weekend?
Well, not too many. I'm going to Mexico in a couple of weeks, so maybe I'll get some spending money.
Nice. Where are you going to in Mexico?
I am going to Zihuatanejo.
It's even just the way you say it.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Yes, you've been there before.
Bring back some very, very nice expensive tequilas while you're there.
I'll just drink it there.
Oh, yeah. All right, that works too. Cindy, good luck. Hopefully we can give you some fun spending money for your vacation here. Open as many vaults as you like. Just stay away from the alarm if that goes off. We can't give you any cash, but we will treat you to a $100 gift card to Kobe Japanese Steak and Seafood House.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's do this. Here is Vault 1.
$275.
$275, Cindy. What say you?
Let's go one more.
$800.
Big jump.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no. Cindy, you sound mad. This is a good problem to have.
I know, but the bank went off early the other day.
Yesterday afternoon with Aaron Henn, when Helena was playing, it was $500 and then the alarm went. So
that so sucks.
Yes, but yesterday at this time, the alarm didn't go until after $3,550.
You know what? I'm a chicken. I'm taking the money. I'm taking and running.
Mm. Running to Mexico.
Yeah.
I am not in a Vegas mood today. I didn't have $800 5 minutes ago. And I'm good.
All right. Yeah. Cindy, you do have $800 now. That's exciting.
It is.
Okay, let's see. Vault 3. We only had to do 2 vaults to get there, so let's see Vault 3.
Wow!
Yeah.
Perfect game! Perfect game!
Yay!
Thank you so, so much. I feel weepy about it.
Well, enjoy.
I really do.
Enjoy Mexico. All of us that in the studio and those listening that are not going to Mexico feel weepy for ourselves.
Not only are you going to Mexico, you've got an extra $800. That's great. Right.
Well, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, Cindy. Thank you so much.
Catch the Nat and Drew Show weekday mornings from 5:30 to 10. Move 103.5.